Hello there and welcome to New Horizons, the weekly radio program of Blind Citizens Australia. BCA is the national consumer representative voice of Australians who are blind or vision impaired. Our mission is to achieve equity and equality by our empowerment, by promoting positive community attitudes, and by striving for high quality and accessible services which meet our needs. Ride our dreams down. Hi, this is Ricky Chaplin with New Horizons. Well, back in May of this year, or thereabouts, I spoke with our next guest on the program. Digital Gap Initiative are doing some fantastic work in terms of publicising the need for standardised legislation, which basically forces people to abide by accessibility standards when designing websites. I'd like to welcome to the program now to talk about a couple of interesting and somewhat troubling things that are happening of late this year. Ted McCoskey, President of Digital Gap Initiative. Ted, welcome.
G'day, Ricky. Thanks very much for having me on again.
As I said, this particular topic we're going to talk about today, it is somewhat troubling, and it's something that not too many of us are aware of yet or have come across, but inevitably we will. And, of course, we're talking about the new touchscreen FPOS machine that the Commonwealth Bank has just rolled out by the name of Albert. Ted, can you tell us a bit about what this device looks like and the issues associated with it?
So Albert is a 7-inch touchscreen tablet built on a highly customized version of Android that Commonwealth Bank released around last couple of days of March or first day or two of April, within a 3 or 4 day period there. There are more than 3,000 of these things out there in the wild. That's not 3,000 locations, because some places obviously could have more than one terminal, and so we don't know the exact number of actual shops that this is in, but there are 3,000 of these individual terminals out there, more than that. There was no reference to accessibility in the manual that was available at that time. There was no communication whatsoever to merchants, to the blindness community that we can seem to locate, or even to bank support staff advising that this thing was out there and that it had no accessibility. I found out about it from a woman in Geelong who went to go visit her doctor, and she went to go pay, and she was presented with this touchscreen tablet, and which has, of course, no tactile keypad. It also has no screen reader. She explained she couldn't see the screen and asked, what am I supposed to do? Have you got a headset or something for me to do it by audio? And they sort of scratched their heads and said, I'm not really sure what you're talking about. They looked in the manual. There was nothing about it in there. And the eventual suggestion to her was just whisper your PIN to me, love. And it wasn't just a risk for the woman, it was a risk to the merchant that an employee was asking for that, and what that employee might do with that information. It was a risk to the merchant because of potential litigation issues there. It was certainly a risk to Commonwealth Bank to have this out there in that sort of a condition. And so the woman then rang Commonwealth and said, "I just wanted to let you know that this happened, and what's the story?" And she said they were completely unaware of any accessibility features. They said, "Oh my gosh, I think that was an oversight." They suggested to her that she actually contact some sort of an organization to basically contact the bank and tell them what they were supposed to do to fix it. Pretty amazing to hear from a bank that you've rung to ask this question of. So she contacted an organization, and they knew of Digital Gap Initiative, so they contacted me, and I looked up and rang their managing director of payment systems at the time, a guy by the name of Gary Rich, and asked some pointed questions and tried to get an understanding of what had brought us to this point. And the end result was that they offered to meet with us And so our founder of Digital Gap Initiative, Giselle Minaj, and myself went to go meet with them and had a demonstration of the proposed accessibility solution. And look, I don't know how better to describe it other than it was pretty much a disaster. It was, besides the fact that it was running on a beta, you know, device, a non-production device, you know, which could explain a couple of the issues, but the entire system of the way it works was, in my opinion, completely flawed from its inception. And I think this is mainly due to the fact that it doesn't appear that there was any testing done in the design phase of this device. And, you know, the results are never good when you don't really consider it at the design phase. So the way it works is, first of all, you can't select the account yourself. You can't turn on the accessibility function yourself. You've got to have a staff member do that for you. And that's assuming that they themselves know how to do it. So assuming that they managed to get that switched on for you, you've got a virtual keypad on the screen that you can't see, with the focus automatically starting on the number 5. So they've tried to simulate a tactile keypad where you've got a raised notch on the 5 and you can find any other number based on that 5. The intention then is that you swipe one direction, so you're going one step at a time to get to all the other numbers. So, for example, if you're trying to enter a 1, you'd swipe once to the left, which would get you to the 4, and then swipe up once to get to the 1. And then once you do that, to enter that, they decided it was, I guess, better to have 2 different gestures you could do for that, just to remove, you know, any confusion. They've given you more than one way to do it. You can either do a 1-finger double tap, or you can do a single tap with 2 fingers.
Right.
why, I have absolutely no idea. And then at some stage, they even got a better idea, and they figured for the more gesture-savvy people out there, they would also put in some shortcuts because, you know, doing 2 gestures to get to one number. So they decided to put in diagonal gestures as well. So you could do an upwards, you know, upwards and to the left gesture to get from the 5 straight to the 1. The only problem with that, of course, being, Ricky, and I'm sure you're sitting there picturing exactly how this would function in real life.
That's right.
And the fact that you've got no screen reader confirming that you've arrived at the right number, how are you to know if you do a diagonal gesture if you've just landed on the 4, the 2, or the 1? All they have is a confirmation sound, like a good sound, yes, you've managed to do a gesture sound, and also and that was incorrect and you have not managed to move anywhere sort of sound. So there's absolutely no way to tell what you've just landed on. You just know that you've moved somewhere. So let's just assume you've done that and you do either your 1-finger double tap or your 2-finger single tap, if you can remember that those are the 2 ways of accomplishing that. And you enter your 4 numbers with a bit of luck. When you then submit that, that is when you find out if any one of the 4 different numbers you had to traverse to was actually successful. And like with any other payment system, if you mess up your PIN 3 times, you've just locked your card. Yeah. By the way, prior to going through all this, if you're someone that isn't a touchscreen guru, you've got to listen to a tutorial. The tutorial goes for about 10 minutes on the device. It doesn't use text-to-speech. It uses a human recorded voice that has 5 chapters to it.
Wow.
And mind you, you're meant to do this while you're standing in a store queue with possibly, you know, 7 or 8 people waiting impatiently behind you. You know, what sort of pressure is that going to put on you? You're probably just going to say, I'll just tell you my PIN number. You
know, because exactly.
The position that you've been put in through absolutely, in my opinion, poor planning and not giving this the sort of attention that it needed in the first place.
Yeah, that's right. When I met with Vision Australia, who met with the Commonwealth Bank back in about July of this year, we asked about the possibility of having a tactile overlay or a keyboard that could be connected either via Bluetooth, or someone suggested USB later on, which I wish I'd thought of it at the time. But they're telling us that, no, we can't possibly do that because there are security issues, even with a tactile overlay. Do you have any insight whatsoever into what these security issues might be?
I do, actually. And look, again, this is purely my opinion, because of course it's one of the first things that that I suggested to them after seeing this. When I asked them that, their response was that there were security issues, and I believe that it's because of the way that they were trying to implement it. They said that that basically this virtual keypad that's on the screen takes up the full real estate of the screen. So, you know, and 7 inches is a pretty big area. Mm. And so they were basically saying that the tactile overlay would be huge and therefore could be seen by someone over your shoulder. Well, that's absolutely the case, but there's also, in my opinion, I don't see why a tactile overlay would need to take up the full screen real estate. There shouldn't be any reason why that's required. It could be a normal telephone keypad-sized overlay. Obviously, the area around the overlay would be larger so as to reach to the edges of the screen, but the actual keypad bit that's tactile certainly doesn't need to take up the full screen real estate. I want to be really clear, if I can, Ricky, to say that our point in all of this is not to demonize Commonwealth. I think they've made some serious mistakes here. Commonwealth is also a very big organization, and that's not to say that every department in Commonwealth, you know, it's not that every digital medium they come out with has these sorts of issues. Albert seems to be, you know, a particularly bad example of their dealing with accessibility. But what we really think it boils down to is the whole reason that Digital Gap exists, which is, you know, there's an absence of minimum national standards that removes the confusion and sets out what a merchant or a manufacturer of technologies' minimum responsibilities are in terms of accessibility.
Yeah, that's right. That's probably a nice little segue into your trip to Canberra coming up on the 12th of November. And that's what it's all about, really, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, we've got an event at Parliament House on November the 12th to go and engage with government and businesses and educators and others on the need for national standards on digital accessibility. And in the absence of that, you know, in the interim steps to have better mechanisms for being able to resolve issues, we'd like to see things like more specific language in the Discrimination Act, you know, where there's currently no reference whatsoever to anything digital and hence is open to, you know, dramatic variance in interpretation when there is legal issues raised. We'd love to see things like the Human Rights Commission to get more of its power back. It used to be able to, you know, to actually make findings when discrimination occurred, and that power was taken away from them back in 2009. And we're not a lobby group, but you know, we certainly have some opinions about you know, some of the things that would help improve the process.
Okay, well, Ted, it's been fabulous talking to you, and always fascinating. We really appreciate the work that you guys are doing, and it's fabulous to see how much ground you've covered just in a 12-month period. So I very much look forward to working with you into the future, as we all do at BCA, and we look forward to what comes out of this trip to Canberra, and also hopefully we can make some progress with this Albert machine. So thanks very much for joining me, Ted, on New Horizons this week.
I absolutely hope so too, and thank you again very much for having me, Rick. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Blind Citizens Australia is funded by the Australian Government through the Department of Social Services and from the Victorian Department of Human Services. We receive financial and in-kind support from Vision Australia, Royal Society for the Blind, Guide Dogs Victoria, and the RPH stations throughout Australia. Generous donations are also received from our members and the broader community. Blind Citizens Australia is located at Ross House, Level 3, 247 to 251 Flinders Lane, Melbourne, Victoria 3000. Our national office contact number is 03 96 54 1400, or toll free 1-800-033-660. You can email us at bca@bca.org.au. Our website address is www.bca.org.au. Ride our dreams down.